Welcome to the Hibernacle. It's our winter retreat where we pretend for a while the outside world doesn't exist. However, that doesn't mean simply hiding under the duvet till spring, tempting though that definitely is. It's more about putting real life on hold for a while in order to rest and re-energise for the year ahead. I'm Lisa Sykes, editor of The Simple Things. This is episode 4, and I'm having a cuppa and a chat with Jo Tinsley, who is one of our regular contributors to The Simple Things. She's also editor of Earnest Journal and author of The Slow Traveller. And this week, we're going on a metaphorical wander, seeking out some of those simple things that offer us a little bit of escape from the norm during the winter months when we spend so much time at home. Hi, Jo. Have you got a little bit of a touch of cabin fever by this time in the winter?
Hi, Lisa. Yeah, no, I definitely do. I mean, when you work at home and it's still dark in evenings, it's hard not to feel cooped up. You know, I appreciate something about all the seasons, but I'm feeling ready for spring. I bet you're the same.
I know what you mean. Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to getting out. But I have to say, there is some benefits to being at home. And one of them is a cosy fire, which leads nicely on for us to say thank you, a big thank you to Charmwood Stoves, who are our supporters for this first season of the podcast. And they make elegant, eco and efficient wood burning and multi-fuel stoves, which are just the thing to come home to when you've been on a wander. And you can find out more and find out where your local stockist is at charmwood.com. Thanks very much. So that's the thing, Jo, isn't it? If you've got children, you may have already been out on an outing or two because it was half term week. Probably yours has either just started or just finished. And I know you've got a young child, but you know, there's no doubt with glimpses of spring, it can still be hard to persuade yourself out of hibernation. And we know it's good for us. We know sunlight is the way we make vitamin D, but it's still hard to get yourself out there, isn't it? What do you do to sort of, you know, punctuate your day or your week at this time of year?
Yeah, it is really hard. I mean, I go swimming in a lake at the weekends, which I know is not for everyone.
Wow, even in winter.
Even in winter, with a wetsuit, obviously.
Impressive.
But yeah, with a dog and a three-year-old, I mean, we have to get out. So we just kick ourselves out and go to the woods, to the local woods. It's always nice, whatever time of year, it's always green. It feels sheltered when the weather's bad, unless it's like really stormy. And it just feels good being in the woods, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's true. You know, I've got a dog too, and I've got teenagers, so they're not interested in going outside at all. But having a dog does make you go out. But of course, there are probably, I think there are two things, aren't they, that put us off going outside. And one is the lack of daylight, and the other is the weather. And tell us why those things shouldn't worry us.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think one of the things I find really interesting is that the kernel of each season kind of hides within the last one.
Oh, I like that idea. So you're already kind of moving into the next season, but
yeah.
Even when you haven't left this one. Yeah, nice.
So even in the middle of winter, even at the winter solstice, that's when the days start to get longer. So it's like this promise of spring is hiding in the middle of winter. And, you know, it's getting lighter all the time. Like right now in London, sunset's 5:20. But that's a whole hour longer than a month ago.
You really can see it, can't you? I mean, we mentioned in a previous episode about how on average it gets lighter by 2 minutes a day, which is great, isn't it? It's really exciting.
It is, yeah. But did you know it's not constant. That's actually speeding up. So around the equinoxes, it's going faster than it is around the solstices. So
wow.
Yeah.
That's good news. There's reasons to be cheerful right there, isn't it? So it actually is, it's more than 2 minutes a day at the moment, basically, because we're approaching the solstice.
It is. We're approaching the equinox, the spring equinox. Yeah. So it's rapidly increasing.
Sorry, not the solstice, the equinox. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Amazing. Oh, well, there we go. So the daylight is not an excuse. What about weather, though? Come on. I mean, when it's cold and grey, and I know you, we should probably do a disclaimer because you and I are both quite outdoorsy people, aren't we?
Yeah, it's true.
And you know, we prefer to be outside than in most of the time.
Yeah.
But not everybody is like that. And we do appreciate that. But what do you do to get yourself out there, really, when the weather is bad?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've always subscribed to that Scandinavian concept of there's no bad weather, there's just bad clothes.
Yeah.
So I just bundle myself up and I get out and about. But there's always things to do at different times of year. And one of my favourite things to do at this time of year, especially after bad weather, not during bad weather, but after there's been, you know, stormy weather, is to go beach combing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, a winter beach has so much to do compared to the summer. You know, there's a lot less people and there's just new and interesting things to see.
Interesting. Yeah, no. And of course, none of us are that far from a beach, really. Certainly day trippable, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. exactly.
And there's something about clearing the head on a beach as well, isn't there? And then, of course, if you're looking for something, if you're looking for treasure, whatever that may be, you're really absorbed in what you're doing as well.
Yeah, this was in the latest, it was in the January issue of The Simple Things. So Vanessa Wright wrote about how this wild weather just stirs up the seabed and it washes creatures up onto the shore that you wouldn't normally find. And yeah, no 2 days are ever the same, and you can just find some really interesting and unusual things.
So what sort of things would you find?
Well, I've brought along a bit of a show and tell, Lisa.
Oh, exciting.
Yeah.
Exciting for me anyway. I shall describe it to our listeners.
Yeah, no, I can put this on Instagram if people are interested.
Wow, that is okay. I'm just going to describe what Joe is showing me. It is a ball. It is bigger than a tennis ball, would you say?
I'd say it's about the size of a gala melon.
Gala melon, there we go. Perfect description. Yeah, it is not the colour of a gala melon. It is kind of bobbly. It is lilacs and greys and sort of heading towards purpley and white. And it is, of course, a sea urchin, isn't it?
It's a sea urchin, yeah. So this is a sea urchin test. It's the hard outer skeleton of a sea urchin. And these are usually found much further out to sea, but after wild weather, they can get thrown up onto the shore, onto the strand line.
That is the biggest one I've ever seen, I have to say.
It's really big. Yeah, I've got two. This one's called Biggie and Smallie. My daughter named them. I didn't. but they're really interesting. Like, there's a lot of folklore around these. People used to put them in children's cradles to prevent disease, you know. There's always something really interesting about the sort of history and folklore of what you find.
Yeah, no, what else would you find? I mean, shells, obviously.
Shells, yeah. I've got this sea potatoes. These are, you're more likely to find these than sea.
Those edible?
No, I don't think so.
They do look a bit potato-like though, don't they?
They do. They look like a little sort of heart-shaped potato, really. But yeah, these wash up in great numbers after storms. Like a few years ago in Penzance, there was hundreds of these on the beach, and they're really brittle. They're almost like crisps.
And what's the deal? Are you allowed to take stuff? I don't know the rules anymore. Are you allowed to collect shells or collect a sea urchin? Or,
well, it's illegal to collect sand and pebbles because of coastal erosion.
Yeah,
but you can sparingly collect shells. Just the most important thing is that they're homes for animals and they're food for animals, so you don't want to take lots.
Yeah,
if you find something interesting and it's a shell and it's not pebbles, then you're fine to take that.
Yeah, so I really love sea glass. It's so beautiful. I know it's not really natural, but you do get some colored, gorgeous colors, don't you?
No, it is really beautiful.
I've actually got a necklace made from it that my partner gave me, and as it's Valentine's, I'll tell the little sweet story. So I told him that no one had ever bought me jewelry before, and so he bought me a sea glass necklace, which is very nice.
Oh, nice. That's lovely.
But what about more unusual things? I mean, you get in our article, it talked about how someone had found mammoth tusks in Herne Bay, and there's all sorts of things, aren't there, that come from much further afield.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things, because we've got these ocean currents that are always moving things across the world. You can get like coconuts that wash up, or drift seeds, which are seeds from Mexico and South America, which come over on ocean currents, and you can find them like in the Hebrides. They're really, really unusual finds.
Nice. So I think we've got a great activity there, haven't we, for post-storm weather.
Yeah.
But, you know, we haven't really addressed how to find better weather. And, you know, one of the things I think is really interesting in our latest issue, this is the new February issue, is the piece we did on microclimates, because they are the answer, aren't they? You can get warmer, drier, sunnier places without actually leaving the country.
Yeah, it's true. So a microclimate is a small area where the weather is very different from the surrounding region.
Yeah.
So it could be because it's sheltered by like a valley or like peninsula or sort of shape of mountains, or it could just be warmed up by ocean currents. And when those two things...
So we're talking the Gulf Stream, aren't we, really?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So straight up the western side of the country.
Yeah, so the Gulf Stream brings warm water from, say, Mexico to northwest Europe. And if we didn't have it, our winters would be about 5 degrees colder.
That's a massive difference, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I know, because we used to go to the Llyn Peninsula in North Wales a lot. And that is, you know, juts out 30 miles straight into the Gulf Stream, doesn't it? And it gets a really interesting microclimate. And, you know, you can actually feel like you're in a different country, especially if you go to somewhere like Port Merion, which is all Italianate architecture. It practically feels like you're on the Amalfi Coast.
Exactly, yeah. And
well, almost.
And that's because of these extra temperatures, it means they don't get so much frost. And so they can grow these really tropical plants.
Yeah, so it adds to the exoticness of the place, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
And actually, I went to Dundee for the first time this year. Really loved it. Great city. But it is billed as Scotland's sunniest city. And that's obviously on the east coast. Mm. Now, that's not getting the Gulf Stream, is it? That's presumably to do with shelter from the mountains.
Yeah, so that's because it's in the lee of the hills, which means in the shelter of the hills. So places on the east of the country generally get less rain than those on the windward side, because we get our winds from the southwest. So places on the east are generally sunnier, warmer, brighter places.
Yeah, well, there were definitely palm trees in Dundee. It was like, I felt like I was in Torquay. But anyway, you've brought up a good point here, Jo, about the leeward side of the mountains, because
I think I know what you're going to say.
You know where I'm going with this, don't you? Because so first of all, you need to know, people, that Jo is from Rochdale on the dark side of the Pennines, and I am from Huddersfield in God's own country on the correct side of the Pennines,
which are actually so close.
And the fact that we're discussing microclimate just proves the point that it is warmer, drier, and sunnier in Yorkshire than Lancashire. I'm sorry, Jo, but the only advantage I can see of Lancashire is that it's nearer the Lake District.
Yeah, no, I do. I mean, I always want to fight the corner for Lancashire, but to be honest, when it comes to weather, I don't have a leg to stand on. Like, I grew up in the rain. Constantly. So
I know it's true. It's not easy to argue the case for Lancashire on weather reasons, but I should say that I do actually spend a lot of time in Lancashire because my partner is from Morecambe. We've had a lot of holidays in the Forest of Bowland, and actually my daughter is applying to Lancaster University, which I'm not sure how I feel about, but you know, we'll go with that. But I think microclimates are great, aren't they? Because you can actually get that sun on your face. That is what we're really after. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Do you know this word? Apricity?
No.
It's the word for the warmth of the sun in winter. It's such a great word.
Oh, nice.
And you can almost feel it when you say the word, you know, and you imagine you sat there in a bench and the sun's just, you know, the power of it's not great all day, is it? But if you go out in the middle of the day, you really do see the benefit.
No, you really notice it. You really do notice it, especially sort of gardening at this time of year. You get those moments when you can kind of feel the warmth on your face and it's just, yeah, it's lovely.
Definitely. Oh, you see, I'm feeling better already. Anyway, we're going to take a small rest now after all the outdoors adventure. We're going to have a pause while I read one of our original short stories that we commission every issue. And this one is about a much needed pick-me-up. Tonic, a short story by Lucy Diamond. Kirsty trudged through the wood. It was a cold spring morning, and the frost still silvered the uppermost branches of the trees. She'd had a hectic few months, with her dad being ill and her boss being difficult about the time she'd had to take off work. Having come for a walk to clear her head, she only felt more fed up with every step. Lost in thought, she didn't notice the dog until the last moment. "Oh," she gulped. It was a young golden retriever, long-legged and bouncy, charging up with a tennis ball in its mouth. "Hello," Kirsty said, glancing round. "Where did you come from?" There was nobody in sight, just the sound of the wind in the trees. The dog dropped the ball at her feet, tail wagging expectantly. "You want me to throw this, do you?" Kirsty said, checking around a second time. The moment she picked up the damp tennis ball, the dog quivered with excitement. Then, as she hurled it into the distance, he raced away in enthusiastic pursuit. A scrabble of paws later and he was back, dropping the ball beside her again, tongue lolling from his mouth. He looked almost as if he was smiling, Kirsty thought, feeling a smile appear on her own face in response. "You're very friendly, aren't you?" she said, scratching behind his soft ears. "But where's your owner, hey?" There was a silver disc on the dog's collar with a phone number engraved, but when she dialed it, it went straight to voicemail. "Hi, I'm in Starling Woods and I found your dog," she said. "Give me a call." The dog had its head cocked endearingly, as if waiting for her to continue their game. "Go on then," she said, grabbing the ball and throwing it as hard as she could. This went on for a while, the dog seeming tireless in its enthusiasm, and Kirsty realised she was enjoying herself too. Laughing even, when the dog leapt athletically to catch the ball in midair. "Good catch," she cheered, giving him a fuss when he lolloped back. "You're so clever." When had she last lived in the moment like this, become red-cheeked with exercise and pleasure? Life had become so serious in recent months, so grim. It was lovely to play, to hear her own laughter again. What was more, bending down to grab the ball, she'd noticed a few starry wood anemones beneath the trees, the trill of a blackbird's song overhead. Spring was coming, she realised with a sudden rush of gladness. Then her phone rang. "You've got Tonic." "Oh, thank you," came a woman's breathless voice. "Tonic?" Kirsty smiled at the dog. The name was appropriate, she thought wryly. "Yes, my dad's got two dogs, Gin and Tonic," came the reply. It could have been worse, though. He wanted to call them Benson and Hedges. "Where are you?" Kirsty explained, and minutes later a blonde woman in a pink puffer jacket appeared with a second dog by her side, Gin, presumably. Tonic was so excited, he rushed around in circles, looping first around the blonde woman, then Kirsty. "Daft thing," the woman said, fondly petting him. "Thanks again, I hope he's not been a nuisance." "Not at all," said Kirsty. "He's lovely. He's actually been just what I needed, a real tonic." "Ah, good boy," the woman smiled. "Well, if you ever fancy joining us for a dog walk again, we're always here at the weekend. Maybe I'll have him better trained by then." "Thank you," Kirsty replied. "I'd love that." She said goodbye and walked away, a new spring in her step. Life, it seemed, might just be taking a turn for the better at last. Well, I think we all need a tonic now and again, don't we? I know I do. And what works for me, a hot drink in front of the fire, that's what I like. And I have got a Charnwood stove, actually, who I may have mentioned are sponsoring this podcast. Thank you very much, Charnwood Stoves. And I do love sitting in front of the fire of an afternoon, but it's always good to have got out first. And this episode is very much about leaving the fireside behind. But you don't need to go far to wander, do you, Jo? It is really about exploring what's on your doorstep.
Yeah, no, it really is. And I think one of the best ways to do it at this time of year is to go out in your lunch hour, because, you know, that's the best shot you've got at getting some daylight and, you know, getting back in time to finish your work or before it gets dark. So I think making time to pop out for a walk, maybe, or pot around the garden in your lunch hour is perhaps a really good intention that we can all set at this time of year.
You're absolutely right. And I found a statistic yesterday that more than two thirds of us do not take our lunch breaks, which is pretty shocking. I mean, you know, we all do it, don't we?
Yeah, I can believe that.
And actually, I don't know, maybe you actually need it more in winter.
Yeah.
Because it's not necessarily cheery while you're sat working, is it?
No.
So you want to kind of get out and do something. So, you know, we've got lots of ideas and we've done pieces on this before, haven't we?
Yeah, we have, about just the reasons why it's a good time to take that time out. I mean, you don't even have to be that active. You can just go and sit somewhere. You can pot around the garden. You can listen to the birds. You know, just do what feels right for you.
So like a mental wander, really, as much as a physical wander.
Yeah.
I like the idea of sitting in my garden doing a bit of bird watching, you know, just watching the garden birds doing their thing around the feeders and stuff. That's a very restful thing. I think that's my equivalent of a fish tank, because I did have a fish tank once and actually it was a lot more effort than I expected to keep those fish alive.
Yeah.
Whereas birds in your garden, that's much easier.
Yeah, and you can also just head out and find some signs of spring at this time of year. You know, there's early blossom. There's bulbs coming up. I mean, have you been noticing signs of spring?
Oh, yeah. Do you know what? The thing I really like this time of year, well, there's two. One is the woodpeckers drumming in the woods. I love that sound you get. And it's usually Jan, Feb when they start doing it, because they're letting potential mates know that they're around. And the other is another bird sight, because if you go to practically any lake, you're going to find great crested grebes, which are really distinctive because they've got that crest on their head. And they do this courtship dance that is so lovely because they intertwine themselves and it looks like they're making a heart together.
So nice.
You know, you'd have to be a pretty hard-hearted person not to feel moved by it. And that's a lovely thing to see. And, you know, practically any park with a big lake will have some grebes in it.
Yeah, and it's just a good time of year to see any wildlife because the trees are bare. So you can see more, you can see deer, you can see birds of prey. You know, it's a great chance to look up and see what's in the sky as well.
I know. I love the views in winter, that they're so much further than they are at any other time of year. You can see things that you don't normally see, don't you? Buildings even. You know, you spot things that are just normally not visible.
Yeah.
And that always feels like a real treat. Because, you know, during lockdown, we got really into wandering around our edge lands, didn't we? You know, places that we'd ignored in the past that suddenly became a new interesting place to go because you weren't allowed to really go much further than your home. And then I think we've kind of lost that habit a bit. So maybe in winter, when you don't necessarily want to go far because you've only got a few hours of daylight or a lunch break, it's a good time to look more closer to home again, isn't it?
Yeah, and you've got a good point about sort of being in a city. There's still so many places to explore. You know, I often find that canals are great places, towpaths are great places.
Mm.
Canals like snake through most city centres. And, you know, you get that well-being feeling of being beside the water and the different wildlife that brings. And just it feels a bit more of a grounded space. People are jogging and walking. And
No, it's true. I really like taking an Ordnance Survey map, because I am a big fan of an Ordnance Survey map, and just finding something on it that I thought, oh, yeah, I didn't know that was there. I could go and check that out. Obviously, Ordnance Survey map's less good if you're in the middle of a city, but in the middle of a city, there are loads of ways to find new places, aren't there?
Yeah, there's loads. And I think one of the other things to remember is don't just slope off if you're working with colleagues. Like, tell your colleagues that you're going out. Encourage other people to do this as well. It's something that we can all do together.
Yeah, no, you're right, actually. I think people see lunch breaks a little bit as, they're having to admit that they're not going to be working for a while. And actually, it's so much better for you, isn't it? And we've got to get over the guilt of the lunch break.
Yeah, and like, it makes you more productive. Like, staying at your desk doesn't mean you'll be more productive. Getting some fresh air, getting some sunshine, all of these things help us feel less sluggish in the afternoon. So it's not only good for you, it's good for the work you're doing as well.
No, I think that's a great plan. The other thing that I liked to do, this is something that I've started doing more recently, because I got sick of going to my old hometown to see my family and spending the whole time there, like sat in my mum's conservatory, chatting away about, you know, and she'd be telling me all the things like, oh, this is closed, that's closed, or, you know, oh, remember this person. And I was thinking, I don't see this town anymore. I never go out and look at it. I never see where I grew up. I don't kind of get involved. And I used to know it so intimately. But probably, like most of us, if we've moved away from home, you leave at 18 just as you're finding it interesting, when you take it all for granted when you're a kid. But also, even if you haven't left, you know, the chances are that you've got a little bit in a rut with you where you live, if you're still living in the place you grew up. And so I think seeing a place in fresh eyes is a really good thing to do. And, you know, and you're going to discover lots of new things that have opened up. I love a new path, right? So like, lots of railways have been turned into long distance paths, but they're also permissive stuff and new parks that are created when landscaping's happened and things like that.
Yeah.
And suddenly you can find back walks. There's a really good walk on, you mentioned canals earlier, on a canal near us that I just never knew was there. And actually, you can go for miles along this canal, and it's beautiful. And you get, the thing about canals, you get to see things from the back view, don't you?
Yeah. You're getting to see the backs of houses and, you know, gardens that lead down to the water. And yeah, there's so many benefits to walking along towpaths, for sure.
And I think, obviously, high streets have had a really hard time, and town centres, and the town centres, you know, we grew up in, where the pubs we bundled around and the shops we used to go to, you know, probably are a bit of a sad state in a lot of cases. But a lot of the suburbs have found themselves, and they've suddenly got a little artisan bakery or a deli or a microbrewery. You know, there are lots of kind of new developments going on that are worth checking out.
Yeah.
And if you don't go and see them, or you don't go exploring, even though you think, well, how can I explore here? Because I know it really well. You'll never find them. So that is my sort of, not a New Year's resolution, because I don't do resolutions, but that is my intention for this year, to do more exploring in my old hometown when I go and see the family.
Yeah, I think there's ways that you can encourage yourself to do this as well, if it doesn't like come naturally to you. So like, a few years ago, I was writing a feature about sketching for The Simple Things.
Oh, I remember. Yeah.
Yeah. And when I intentionally sat down to sketch in various parts of the city in Bristol, I realised that looking at the tops of the buildings, that many of the weather vanes were ships.
Oh, how cute.
You know, because it's got a good seafaring sort of history. It wasn't cockles.
And there are lots of them.
Yeah, they're all over the place. And it's like, if you just take those moments to notice new things, you know, and there's lots of ways to do this. You can find a local guidebook or a local map. You know, there's some fantastic maps out there, like the London National Park City Map, which highlights all of the green and blue spaces in the city.
Oh, that's nice, isn't it? Yeah.
Or Herb Lester
maps. Oh, Herb Lester maps are lovely, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're just works of art.
They're fantastic. Yeah.
And they just kind of give you a sense of the personality of the city, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If people don't know, they take a sort of quirky angle on a city and explore all of the landmarks that address that angle. And whenever I go abroad, if I, you know, go to a European city, I always buy them.
Nice.
Because it's just an interesting way. But I mean, you've got them for the UK cities, various different versions.
Yeah. You see, you were telling me earlier, and I think this is really interesting, tell me about your walking home, because I think there's a pilgrimage of sorts to places that you know and love, isn't there?
Yeah, it's true. Because the place that I grew up, I don't go back to because my parents don't live there anymore. But yeah, I did do this pilgrimage quite recently. So 20 years ago, I moved to Bristol and I hadn't found my tribe. I hadn't found people to walk with. And so I used to just get the bus to Wells in Somerset, pop trot around the market on my own, go for a walk in the Mendips, because I think it was a landscape that reminded me of the Pennines. It made me feel at home.
Yeah, yeah.
And now 20 years later, I'm living in Somerset. I'm living within a few miles of this place that used to mean so much to me.
Nice.
And so last summer, I took a bus to Wells, potted around the market, and then I just walked home to my new home. It was only about 6 miles, but it felt really meaningful. It felt like I was treading this path from this former stage of my life to this stage now. And like, pilgrimages don't need to be long distance, to be transformative, to feel meaningful for you.
I think that's really interesting, because I think everybody can find a connection with a place, can't they?
Exactly.
And actually that connection is reinforced if you travel to it on foot, which is what a pilgrimage is, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
I think there are lots of reasons to get out in winter, aren't they? But it is more tricky because you do have less daytime. But I know you're a fan of a twilight walk, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. I really love this. I don't know if you look them up. There's so many beautiful names for this time of day as well. You know, in Scotland, you've got...
Oh, go on then.
You've got the gloaming or dimmit.
Yeah.
And you've got dimpsy in Devon. But there's also this really beautiful word, crepuscular. It's just such a lovely word to say, which means twilight or...
Oh, nice.
An animal that's active at this time of day.
Yeah. So we need to be more crepuscular, is what you're saying, Jo.
We do, yeah. But I think there's so many rewards with going on a twilight walk. There's a lot, just noticing the different smells, the different sights, the different sounds. You know, there's wood smoke, there's a sound of owls.
Mm.
Or you just notice how quiet it is, you know, without the bird calls and the traffic.
Yeah, and actually you can do it in urban areas too, although it's a slightly more nosy parker type walk.
Mm.
Because if you're walking down the street at twilight, the chances are that most people's curtains aren't yet drawn. So you get to have a really good peek in people's windows. And... I have to say, I do like a bit of that if I'm walking down an urban street. But, you know, actually, there's a real practical reason why sunset and sunrise, you know, sunrise comes very late and sunset comes very early. So you don't need to be up with the larks or be a night owl to enjoy them. Unlike in summer where they're obviously dawn comes very early and you really do have to force yourself to get up to appreciate it. So I think there's something to be really said. I mean, maybe full on night hikes in winter is a bit for the brave, but twilight holds all sorts of possibilities, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And even just, you know, I think gardeners particularly love this time of the day, because in this, I don't know if you know this, but there's 3 phases of twilight.
Oh, no, I did not know that.
In the first one, which is civil twilight, such a polite term, isn't it?
Civil twilight.
But, you know, this is a really nice time to garden because it means you can potter about. You don't need a torch. You're getting those last little bits of the light.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a really nice time to be outside.
I'm often trying to finish jobs in the garden at that time of day.
Yeah. So civil twilight's when the sun is between sunset and 6 degrees below the horizon. And next comes nautical twilight.
Right.
Which dates back to when sailors used to use the stars for navigation.
And is that when the first stars appear over the sea then?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's like, it's not too dark, but you can start to see stars with the naked eye. And then astronomical twilight, which is when the sun is between 12 and 18 degrees. And that's when, more stars to come out and it starts to feel like true dark.
So is stargazing better in winter?
Yeah, I mean, it's clearer. I think the cold air holds less moisture in it. And so when you have a clear night, it's super crisp. And it's just really nice to see stars in that kind of atmosphere.
Right, well, I'm definitely crossing my fingers for a clear night tonight after that. So I'd just like to, you know, make a small plug really, because we run these outings, which are spontaneous day trips in every issue of the magazine. And the idea is you don't need to plan too much. You just can go and see and do things. And Jo and I are always coming up with ideas for these things, aren't we? So hopefully we've given you a few ideas for wandering, you know, relatively little effort to get you to leave your sofa or duvet behind and stride out into the beginnings of a new year. I'd like to say thank you to Charnwood Stoves for helping to bring this podcast to you all, and you can check them out at charnwood.com. And thanks also to Jo for her always interesting conversation.
Thank you.
And fascinating facts. Jo and I will be back next week for the last episode in this season, which will be an appreciation of wonder and the wonder of winter. See you then.